present the News Quiz with your chairman, Simon Hoggart.
Hello and welcome back to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting taken from The New Scientist, read by Charlotte Green.
Every rectal thermometer made by Johnson & Johnson is personally tested.
Thanks to Jem Gleason of Sleaford for that. Let's meet the teams. Please welcome first on my right, Francis Ween and Fred McCauley. Opposite them on my left, Alan Corran and Jeremy Hardy. Francis, the serious question. Why does Tony Blair think his MPs are the most revolting ever?
Well, that's a difficult question, isn't it? Yes. The oppressed masses, after labouring for years under the Iron Heel of the dictator, have finally risen up. This man with weapons of mass destruction, and 120 of them voted against him. And various other MPs. Kenneth Clark, all these dangerous radicals. John Gummer. They too stood up and said, not in my name, which in the case of Gummer is entirely right. I mean, no one would declare a war in the name of Gummer. But anyway, they're all doing it. And poor old Blair, he's taken a bit of a setback, but he doesn't seem to pay any attention to these things, so that's all right. And we're all going to war, regardless.
I watched Newsnight immediately after the vote, and they had, in the interest of balance, they had Chris Smith, who won't support the war unless there's a UN resolution, which there will be, because America will bribe and blackmail everybody until there is one. And then to counterbalance his very radical opinion, they had Michael Portillo, who supports all wars because he's a conservative, and Mike O'Brien, who supports the war because he's a member of the government. And they were all very polite, and they said, what a marvellous evening it had been. And Mike O'Brien, a little smile crept over his face, and he said, yes, it was a good debate. And I thought, well, that's the main thing, isn't it, really? When thousands of people are about to die, so long as the cut and thrust of polite parliamentary discourse is at an elevated level, all's right with the world, isn't it? I was fascinated by the idea that the war is going to bring justice for Kurdistan, because in order for that to happen, America will have to also attack Turkey, because Turkey's already agreed to be used as a base for attacking Iraq. I'm not sure they're ready to agree to being attacked as well. It's an awful lot in the 1 week, isn't it?
I don't know if the microphone's picked it up, but there's a gentleman in the audience here. When you said it involves Turkey being attacked as well, he went, yes.
He's got a Greek restaurant around the corner. Or whether it was
yes!
Great line tonight on the news, or last night on the news if you were listening, is to hear that Condoleezza Rice had phoned Angola 6 times because they're trying to get Angola on side in the Security Council.
And six times,
yeah. Well, she keeps on phoning Angola, they're never there, they don't reply. She rings up and says, you're never right. And having to explain to Bush that she'd phoned Angola, and Bush wondering who this person was.
I wonder if they've got tone dialing where you press your star key and then it says, to make threats, press 1. To offer aid, press 2.
Government suffered the biggest backbench revolt in more than a century when 121 Labour MPs defied a 3-line whip and voted against the Prime Minister. Tony Blair's premiership is looking increasingly on the line, with little for him to look forward to except joining the multi-million-pound inept ex-premier's Wheels of Steel book tour, with Lady Thatcher on bass and John Major on drums. Fred, who was shaken and seriously stirred this week?
Yes. This was the old gentleman who was, well, in fact, he was released this week in South Africa, having been arrested about 3 weeks ago, I think, by the FBI. They arrested him because he was English and had spectacles. It was mistaken identity, wasn't it? This man was
caught.
They
thought he was a Texan fraudster.
Yeah. Well, they thought he was Eric Sykes.
Well, I was very unsettled.
He's called Derek Bond.
Well, there are people here who remember Derek Bond. He's a tall, thin actor with crinkly hair. It was a matinee idol. Remember Derek Bond? Same generation. Yeah, thank you.
Same bloke in the audience just went, yes!
Yes! I go to his restaurant. I keep him sweet. But the real man's name was Derek... What? Sykes.
Yeah. It was like Eric Sykes, but with a D.
That's right.
That was what confused them.
That's so the FBI have got wanted notices out for Hattie Jacks. Derek Hatton, Samantha Bond, Basildon Bond, Brooke Bond, Basildon.
But they, the FBI, I mean, they did vaguely apologise, but I thought not very graciously, and they said, oh, well, it's an easy mistake, anyone could make this. Mm. Except that the FBI is supposedly, you know, in charge of tracking down and rounding up terrorists and sending people to Guantanamo Bay and saying who's in Al-Qaeda and who isn't, and doesn't raise great confidence in their
methodology. Exactly. They didn't put him in Guantanamo Bay or try and fit him up with being a member of Al-Qaeda, which shows they've completely lost interest in the war on terror.
they just want to persecute members of the Bristol Rotary Club, which seems fair enough to me. But
didn't he say that the only thing that kept him sane in the 3 weeks was the Telegraph type crossword? Yes. A report that was only in one newspaper in this country. Surprisingly enough.
British pensioner Derek Bond was released from a South African police cell after being mistakenly detained on behalf of the FBI. His cell had a stainless steel lavatory, a foam mattress on the floor, and a low stool, making him the envy of British pensioners everywhere. Jeremy, why is the Prime Minister taken to moaning about the weather?
He's been to see the Pope. How do you debate something when you're both infallible? He's, Is it the energy thing?
Yeah.
Wind farms and that. Ah, he's doing his bit for green energy. He says they can have 5 years to prove we can have renewable energy. Otherwise, he's just threatening us. Otherwise, nuclear power is going to be expanded. But he did make a sideswipe at President Bush. He said that America had not done its bit for Kyoto. And so it just shows how independent he is. You might call it attacking Bush's rear from the inside.
In a policy speech for environmentalist Tony Blair said the threat of global warming was as serious as the war on terrorism. The government set ambitious targets to cut carbon dioxide emissions. Mr. Blair's banned John Prescott from opening his mouth. Alan, listen to this.
Sorry now, whose heart is aching for breaking each bond.
Alan, which sorry leader has apologised this week?
Sorry leader?
Yes. Which sorry leader has apologised this week? Which leader is sorry?
I mean, it's presumably IDS.
Yes.
Somewhere. Well, I've been away. I mean, listeners will know that I wasn't here last week. I was top of a mountain in Corsica, where they spoke of little else except the Conservative succession. People kept coming up to me in the street and saying, what's happened to Francis Maud? It was so hard to do that over a piece of goat bladder and a glass of the local stuff. They're very keen on Oliver Letwin in the mountains of Corsica there. In Duncan Smith, I think that's... I think I've just said all I know about Ian Duncan. But there's some kind of revolt, and he's very upset with Portillo, who he says is a cancer, which is a rather awful thing to say.
No, he had to write to lots of Tories that he'd offended because a piece appeared saying he was briefing against them. He's apologised to them all. Sent them little letters.
Which, well, IDS did?
IDS.
It's a bit hard for the Tories. When you sort of think that at the end of the day, when Labour's stolen all their clothes, at least they'll have mindless jingoism and craven support for the White House. But even that they've lost.
Well, it's a bit like that poor chap in South Africa. Identity theft happens all the time.
Ian Duncan Smith apologised to his MPs this week following the furore over the sacking of three central office modernisers and anonymous briefings against the party chairman, Theresa May. Mr. Duncan Smith is a former Scots Guard. That's the same as a regular guard, only deep-fried in batter.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry, I forgot. I forgot you were Scottish. We think of you as an honorary English person. No, it's a compliment, honestly. We start round two with a cutting from the Guardian newspaper's TV listings.
Monday, the 24th of February, BBC One. 11:55, Body Hits. Do detoxification treatments such as colonic irrigation work? 12:25, Liquid News.
Thanks, Randy McDougall, for that. Francis, which trendy vicar has spent time on the throne this week?
Which trendy vicar? It's the hairy Anglican.
It is.
Archbishop. He was enthroned. Yes. And Blair went, I think.
The Queen didn't go, did she?
No, the Queen, no, she doesn't go. Because she is the supreme governor of the Church of England. So it would be a pretty poor show if she went to acknowledge that there was anyone else rivaling her in seniority. And it's for some constitutional reason that I don't understand.
But she's got foreign.
That could be it.
I'm afraid that I have to say that we Scots missed this. I think we got the Celtic Stuttgart game instead.
Well, you don't have a Church of England, do you?
No, we don't.
As such.
But I think the moderator of the General Assembly of the Church of Scotland came down to wish him all the best. Mind your back, sonny.
Actually, where it said in the paper, it said he'd brought a Celtic touch. I actually thought it said that he'd brought a Celtic touch. I thought that's very ecumenical, isn't it? Setting up in a Celtic jersey, carrying a tricolour.
Rowan Williams was enthroned this week at Canterbury Cathedral as the new Archbishop. He succeeds Tony Blair, who now sits on the right hand of God. Fred, listen to this. Fred, why are Britain's cats being offered more than 9 lives?
That's a veterinary question.
I thought that was a theme to Cagney and Lacey.
What was that? Was that Rolf's animal slaughterhouse? The vets of Britain think that they might follow in the veterinary footsteps of the Americans and Australians by offering transplants for pets and other animals, cats mainly, and they do it in the States, but there is an ethical question. Now, you know that when ethics and animals come together, it means that Naomi Campbell and Kate Moss get their clothes off. So I'm all for that. Now, some of these girls get a wee bit confused, you know, because they strut about naked and say, yeah, we are supporting PETA, and then 3 days later they've got a new fur coat on. They just don't see the link.
It's about donorship and which cat's going to donate it, which seems so silly, because you can go up to the A40 any day of the week and peel them off. And it's extremely small. You need very deft fingers. You've got to be like a Luxembourg philatelist, actually, to get a cat's kidney out, because our cat had a rough kidney. It was the size of a hazelnut. I mean, is he bloody tiny? It could have been anything. Could have been a gallbladder. I mean, to you and me, it would have been a gallbladder. They're really worried about which cats are going to provide kidneys for this, whether cats are going to have these little donor cards around their necks.
It is a difficult question to put to a cat. You know, are you prepared to give up your kidney? because I think the receiving cat's probably quite pleased about it. And if we can have silence, I can just about do a manageable impersonation of a cat consenting to its kidney going. And imagine if your cat that was lying there waiting to receive a kidney, imagine if you're a wee Jehovah's Witness cat. Are you sure? It could extend your life by 3 years. Suit yourself, eh?
That was a Mormon cat you just did.
In the States, they've even done it on cows. Now, I can just see in the theatre, you know, you've got the vet standing there, and just in the off chance that there's a rejection, he's got some onions getting fried. Mashing his potatoes.
Vets are brilliant, though. Vets can do everything, can't they? people, they have to, you know, you get all these different specialists, but vets are bloody much. You should go and see the vet next time there's anything wrong with you. Go see the vet, because they can do the whole, all of you, and deworm you.
Because you get around the ethical problem simply by buying two cats and using the bits of one for the other and replacing them. I did that with a Morris Minor years ago. Yeah. What you end up with is one healthy cat and a glove puppet.
The Royal College of Vets has sort of decided to allow cats to have kidney transplants. Cats in America are already allowed to have organ transplants, but then pets in America can drive, carry a gun, and run for president. 2 points. Jeremy, what pioneer has boldly gone and went?
I've no idea.
You know this, yes, you do.
I don't.
It's that bloody speck up in the sky. Yes, that's one of those specks.
They don't it's let Pioneer to... make satellites, did I? I thought they could only do bad stereo systems. Oh, my God, they'll be having Grundig Martian probes next.
But this thing went off to Uranus and Venus and all those other places, and now it's finished, and it's going out into whatever is beyond it.
Oh, right.
Thurrock, probably. Right. It's going actually to something called Taurus. It's going to take 2 million years to get there. This Richard Branson buys it, and then it'll be 3 million years. But it's a space thing.
Is it going to take
as we say in NASA. It's one of those things that they send out into space.
And it's
for
going to
money.
Take 3 million years?
2 million years. Blimey. 2 million years, anything goes wrong.
Are they going to put Thora Heard on it? She'll see us all out, Thora.
You know, she sits in this assisted chair. She's going up and down like a bloody yo-yo, hasn't she? 20 years. She's like a hinge now, Thora.
Looks like fun, that. Like Alton Towers without the queue.
The Pioneer 10 space probe, the first man-made object to leave the solar system, sent its final signal home 31 years after it was launched. Its final message was delivered on January the 22nd and read, "What do you mean we should have turned left at Jupiter? Give me that bloody map." Alan, why is hospital food back on the menu?
That's Grossman, isn't it?
It is.
That ghastly man. Fred can probably do him. Can you do Grossman?
No.
No.
I can do
someone
cat.
Should. Because
you probably detect a fake Bostonian accent here.
Well, he's launched his own sources as well. There's this television ad where this ghastly man comes on and thinks he's Paul Newman because he's got a mayonnaise and an onion sauce. But he was drafted in to do hospital menus and hospital food and giving these unfortunate people who've been waiting on trolleys for 4 years something really nice. And he was doing cotelette à la manière de la Vicomtesse de Bragelon and stuff like this. And if they send it back, he hit them. And it isn't working. Nobody wants to eat his muck, do they?
Exactly.
Nigella would be all right. I mean, you can't ask, but Nigella doing a ward round, put the roses in their cheeks.
Food inspections have revealed that standards in the NHS are improving despite the decision not to adopt any of the recommendations made by Lloyd Grossman. Hospitals have taken different approaches to improving their output. Cottage hospitals offer cottage pie, teaching hospitals have introduced alphabet soup, and gender reassignment centres are getting rid of meat and two veg. Before we start the final round, here's a church bulletin.
Weight Watchers will meet at 7 p.m. at the First Presbyterian Church basement. Please use large double door at side entrance.
Thanks to Isabel Hunter of Glasgow for that. Francis, listen to this. Francis, who learned to accept their reward at the Co-op?
It's Lord Irvine, the Lord Chancellor.
It is.
Who has decided to try and disprove this idea that he's this grand panjandrum, this Cardinal Wolsey figure, by shopping at the Co-op and demanding his divvy. He was in a village
in Scotland.
You've
never said that before, have you, Francis? You've neither said Co-op nor divvy ever before in your life.
You'd be surprised. I used to be a member of the London Cooperative Society many years ago when I lived in London.
That was when it was an illegal drinking club.
Well, there was that, yeah. But anyway, yes, Derry Irvine, he was near one of his many country estates in Scotland, and he popped down to the local village to buy some groceries to the village shop, the Co-op. and demanded his divvy. He was due £1 or something on this grocery shopping, but couldn't produce his card, and so he kept this queue of shoppers waiting while he went outside to his limo and rummaged in the glove compartment for his co-op card. Platinum, obviously, co-op card.
I think he was alerted to his divvy because he misheard the operative in the cooperative saying, "Yeah, diddy."
Is he very popular in Scotland? Or
we don't really know who he is. We have tiles on our walls.
The Lord Chancellor, Lord Irving, held up a queue at his local co-op to argue about a £1 dividend before reluctantly returning to his car to fetch his co-op card. From 1985 to 1988, Lord Irving served as a recorder before graduating to a position as a penny whistle. Fred, which kissing couple was highly strung this week?
Is this the Rodin's The Kiss?
It is.
Which an artist whose name I think is Cornelia Parker has draped string round in some kind of bondage thing, which I'm sure Rodin would be delighted about. But this shows that British art is in a very healthy state, and I've had some more ideas along the same line myself. I thought we could maybe stick a light bulb on Rodin's The Thinker. And he did The Hand of God, which I thought we could just attach Diego Maradona to and rub some salt into that wound. This is from the woman who I heard on Desert Island Discs saying that the luxury goods she would like to take to the desert island would be a solar-powered vibrator. Which is fine, ladies, as long as you don't stick it where the sun don't shine.
I didn't understand the string thing. I mean, it looked like two nudists fighting over a spaghetti dinner. I don't know what the purpose of the string was.
It's a reference to Lady and the Tramp, Alan.
Oh, right.
Yes. Eh?
That was
dog. Oh, only the most romantic moment in movie history, the spaghetti and the meatballs in Lady and the Tramp. You have no hearts, you people. Everyone knows that. Yes, it's a night, it's a wonderful night. Oh, and then, oh. People, am I wrong? Oh, God, you sweaty losers.
August Rodin's sculpture The Kiss has been wrapped in 1 mile of string for a new art exhibition in London. It's not known yet whether the public will want to see two lovers strung up, unless it's Neil and Christine Hamilton. Thank you. Alan, your last question. Which former PM had a little extra zip injected into her premiership?
Well, there's only one. I mean, it's Thatcher.
Yes.
A little extra zip. The only thing I read about Thatcher during the week was she was drunk all the time. Is that it?
Yeah.
But she didn't sleep at all. She just got up in the night and sucked on this single malt teat that was hanging by the bed. She had a drip. She'd been giving advice to various people who are feeling low and glum, like Blair, and says there's no such thing as counselling, and you know, all you have to do is pull yourself together and have another large, stiff one, Dennis, and then you'll be all right, and you can get through a premiership on whiskey.
If she ever sobers up, she is going to think, oh, my God, what have I done? What did I say? God, I remember East Anglia vaguely. God. But she also used to have vitamin injections into her bottom, apparently. And they had to, with a needle, she didn't just sort of shake up some Medoxone and fire it up there. Because you could do that, because it fizzes, you could do that, couldn't you? Probably.
5.5 million Scots would have happily come and kicked it in her arms. That's for the poll tax, Margaret.
A new documentary reveals that the Iron Lady prevented herself from rusting with a combination of whiskey and vitamin B12 injections. She was given the energy-boosting injections into her backside. Sadly, Tony Blair can't receive the same treatment because doctors would be blinded by the sunshine. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Francis.
Simon, I'm very grateful to Brian Francis of Bristol, who sent me this from the Western Daily Press. It's a piece about the difficulties faced by people who suffer with squinting, and it's a quote from someone who's expert in the field. One person I spoke to had given up his job as a lecturer because he couldn't cope with standing in front of a class and people not knowing which way he was looking. He's now a bus driver.
for it.
Thanks to Deirdre Lee for this one, and the story is of an Italian man aged 86 and a 74-year-old woman who were given a 50-day suspended jail sentence yesterday for indecent exposure after being discovered having sex in their parked car. 86 and 74. You're going to hope that that's in every broadsheet in the country. Yeah, that was us. Police took 2 hours to get there and arrived just in time to catch the man pulling his trousers up, going, am I taking these up or am I taking them off? All right, one more time.
86 and 74. He's a cradle snatcher, isn't he? 12-year gap there.
Jeremy.
Well, we've got two people have sent in the same clipping, but sadly there can only be one winner. One came from Anne Stapleton, who wrote Dear Mr. Hoggart, so we'll ignore her, and we'll instead read out the one that came from the fantastically named Mr. David Batman. He's from Altrincham in Cheshire, and this is from the Manchester Evening News. It's an advert for Air Atlanta Europe. Cabin crew, and these are requirements. Minimum age of 20 years, weight in proportion to height, good standard of education, a confident swimmer.
Alan.
It's from Ski Monthly, Simon. And it's from Sarah Ferguson's guest column. And it says, it is essential for all novices to overcome early posture difficulties if they don't want to be stuck with them forever. These, of course, vary. I, for example, have always found it very hard to keep my knees together.
Thank you all. Now let's look at the final score. Jeremy and Alan have 15 points, but Francis and Fred are this week's winners with 16 points. Before we leave you, here's an item from Belfair's High School newsletter.
A group of Year 7 students are taking part in an inter-school challenge at Westcliff High School. Teams have set the challenge of devising methods to communicate with aliens and explain what life is like for young people in Essex.
Thank you. With that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Francis Green, Fred McCauley, Jeremy Hardy and Alan Corran. The chairman was Simon Hoggart, and the news is read by me, Charlotte Green. The chairman's script was written by Simon Littlefield, Paul McKenzie, Lucy Clark and George Poles. And the producer was Simon Nichols.